was going to ask you about anemia. When do you typically see it and how do you manage it?
So it's a cumulative toxicity. The GI toxicity can happen relatively early on, but it's cumulative. I manage it with transfusions. It would be certainly acceptable to use erythropoietin stimulating agents through their risk evaluation mitigation strategy, the REMS. It's not what we do. We use blood transfusion because it's cheap, it works, and it's safe. And the patients are coming and familiar with our infusion center. And we do it when they're symptomatic. And every patient is symptomatic at a different time. And again, it's about survivorship. So we actually try to anticipate. So we'll have a threshold, and our nurses know that this patient is pretty durable. She becomes symptomatic at a hemoglobin of 7 or 8. So when she gets like 8-ish, before she gets to 7 and symptomatic, we'll transfuse her. Rather than have her get symptomatic and recover, because that's not accomplishing our goal of survivorship and good quality of life. Some patients get symptomatic between 8 and 9. Very few patients are symptomatic, though, above 10.
What do we know about second cancers and leukemia with olaparib?
Yeah, right? So I didn't explain how this works, but maybe now's a good time. PARP inhibitors prevent the repair of single-stranded DNA damage. PARP is an enzyme. When we have DNA damage, we get single-stranded breaks. PARP, poly-ADP ribose polymerase, repairs those single-stranded breaks. If you inhibit that enzyme, the single-stranded break becomes a double-stranded break, and double-stranded breaks are repaired through homologous recombination, which is what BRCA does. So that's the link. Single-stranded break, you can't repair it because of a PARP inhibitor. Get a double-stranded break, can't repair it because of a BRCA mutation, the cell dies, okay? So what is known about second cancers? Well, when you start inhibiting DNA repair, you can promote mutations, which is just what we said, and second cancers, specifically myelodysplastic syndrome and acute myelogenous leukemias have been reported. Now, the difficulty is it because of the PARP inhibitor? Or is it because of the other DNA damaging agents, platinum? I don't know. Let me tell you how often it happened, though. In the labeled study, it was 2%. Across the database for olaparib, which is 2,500 patients, it's 1.4%. So you get it. It's 1% to 2%. But I don't really know whether it's because of the platinums or whether it's become the PARP inhibitors. But this is an area of concern, and we are monitoring all of our patients, not only with PARP inhibitors, but with DNA damaging agents. So if you see a patient whose bone marrow doesn't recover, get a bone marrow biopsy. You might be surprised what you find.
What do we know about the responsiveness of patients with ovarian cancer, serous ovarian cancer, without BRCA mutations to PARP inhibitors and olaparib?
Yeah, so they can still respond, right? And that's why you asked me that. And why do they respond if they don't have a BRCA germline mutation? Because they have other genes that are in that pathway, the Fanconi anemia pathway, which are important in repairing those double-stranded breaks, those homologous recombination repair genes. So there are non-BRCA patients that can respond. And who are they? They're patients who respond to platinum many times, because if you can respond to platinum, you probably can't repair the DNA damage that platinum caused, and you probably have a BRCA-like abnormality.